Welcome to today's deep dive. We are thrilled you are here with us. If you are joining us to get a shortcut to being well-informed, you are in the exact right place. Our mission today is to explore a truly fascinating paper from 1989.
Right, from the Journal of Material Science Letters.
Exactly, authored by M. Takahashi and HKDH Padeshia. Now, our topic today might sound a bit like science fiction at first glance, but it is actually the bedrock of modern manufacturing. We are talking about dilatometry in steel transformations.
Yeah, and to set the stage for you, let's look at how the source actually defines that term. Dilatometry is one of the most powerful techniques for studying transformations in steel. It allows for the real-time monitoring of dimensional changes.
So in other words, scientists are watching exactly how much a piece of metal physically expands or shrinks while it undergoes these massive internal transformations.
Precisely. Because, you really can't simply look inside a piece of solid steel with a microscope while it is changing phases at extreme temperatures.
No, of course not. It's way too hot.
You have to rely on external clues. As the atomic structure of the steel shifts and reorganizes itself into new phases, the physical volume of the entire block of steel actually changes. It swells or it contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And dilatometry uses these incredibly precise instruments to measure those microscopic changes in length. By tracking that external change, metallurgists try to infer what is happening invisibly inside the material.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this is exactly where the paper introduces a massive industry-wide assumption that these two researchers decided to tackle.
It's a big one.
It really is.
Yeah.
For years, people interpreting this experimental data assumed that when steel changes size during an isothermal reaction, meaning a reaction happening at a constant, steady temperature.
Well, yes, steady temperature.
They assumed the change in its length is exactly perfectly proportional to how much of the steel has transformed.
They assumed a perfect one-to-one relationship.
And even crazier, they often assumed that when the piece of metal stops changing size entirely, the transformation must be 100% complete.
Yeah, they treated the expansion of the metal like a loading bar on a computer screen.
Yes. Once the bar stops moving, the download must be finished.
And that loading bar analogy captures the danger perfectly. In material science, treating a physical reaction like a simple digital progress bar is incredibly risky.
Because it's not a digital file.
Exactly. When a chemical or physical reaction stops before the original material, what we call the parent phase, is totally transformed, we need a reliable, mathematically sound way to actually calculate the volume fraction of the new phase that has been created.
We can't just guess based on when the metal stops growing.
No, we cannot. So the primary goal of Takahashi and Padeshia's paper is to rigorously test if that convenient linear assumption actually holds up under scientific scrutiny. They wanted to provide a real mathematical method for relating the length change of the specimen to the true extent of the transformation.
So to do this, the researchers couldn't just use any random scrap of metal.
No, they had to be very specific.
Right, they had to cook up a very specific batch of steel. The recipe used in their research was iron mixed with 0.3 weight percent carbon and 4.08 weight percent chromium.
And that specific blend is crucial for creating a controlled environment. But, and this is important, the paper explicitly notes this isn't just a niche study for one hyper-specific metal.
Oh, right, the chromium.
Yeah, the chromium in this recipe can actually be swapped out for other substitutional elements or combinations of elements. That detail makes these findings broadly applicable to a wide variety of industrial steels that you interact with every single day.
So we have our specific steel recipe. What is actually happening to it during this experiment?
Well, the researchers are studying a very specific and very common phase change. In this experiment, the parent phase of the steel is called austenite.
Austenite.
Yes. Yeah. Think of austenite as a very specific, tightly packed, rigid box of atoms that exists when the steel is heated to high temperatures. During the experiment, this austenite is decomposing into a mixture of two new things.
Which are?
Bainitic ferrite and carbon-enriched residual austenite.
So if I am visualizing this, it is like a tightly packed, uniform room full of people suddenly shifting and breaking apart into two distinct new groups.
I like that.
All while the room is held at a constant high temperature.
That is a great way to picture it. And as those groups shift and rearrange, the physical dimensions of the room itself, the metal block, actually change.
Which brings us to the math they used to track this shifting room. The paper introduces two different formulas to map this out, equation 1A and equation 1B.
Right.
Equation 1A is essentially the standard, slightly simplified way of looking at the problem. It assumes that the relative change in the length of the steel is simply one-third of the relative change in its volume.
It also makes another huge leap. Because density changes during these steel transformations are relatively small, equation 1a assumes that the mass fractions and the volume fractions of the steel are identical.
Which seems like a pretty convenient shortcut.
What's fascinating here is how the researchers systematically challenged those simplified models. Equation 1b was introduced precisely to avoid that last assumption.
So it's the more rigorous version.
Much more rigorous. It does not rely on the convenient but potentially flawed idea that mass fractions and volume fractions are perfectly interchangeable during the transformation. By comparing the results of the simpler equation 1a and the more complex equation 1b, they could see exactly how much distortion those lazy assumptions were introducing into the data.
But the paper found something incredibly surprising.
They really did.
After running the numbers, the researchers discovered that the difference between the results from the simple equation 1a and the complex equation 1b was actually completely negligible.
It barely made a difference at all. The simple math held up.
It did. But as I was reading the source, I noticed something strange in the math itself. These two equations look almost identical, but there's this random factor of 2 sitting right in the numerator of equation 1a.
Just hanging out there.
Yeah. It seems like a magic number just dropped into the formula to make it work. Where did that 2 actually come from?
That 2 isn't random at all. It is actually the beautiful atomic secret of this whole paper.
The atomic secret.
Yes. It represents the physical reality of the atoms themselves. You see, a unit cell of ferrite, which you can think of as the absolute smallest repeating geometric box of atoms in that new structure, contains exactly 2 iron atoms.
Okay, 2 atoms.
But a unit cell of the parent phase, the original austenite, contains 4 iron atoms.
Wow, so the math is literally just counting the atoms in the box.
It is a perfect example of how macroscopic math is ultimately governed by microscopic realities. Because the austenite unit cell has 4 iron atoms and the resulting ferrite unit cell has 2, that geometric ratio beautifully balances out the equations.
That makes perfect sense.
It ensures that the straightforward calculation in equation 1a holds up remarkably well against the more rigorous equation 1b. The fundamental atomic building blocks of the metal act as a natural equalizer in the math.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the researchers didn't just stop at that basic, clean transformation.
No, because real-world steel production is messy.
Exactly. So we have to ask, what happens when the new ferrite being formed is supersaturated with carbon?
Or what happens when it isn't?
Right. Or, even more chaotic, what happens when another entirely different element, a hard compound called cementite, starts precipitating out of the austenite at the exact same time?
Suddenly, you don't just have one simple transformation happening. You have multiple overlapping chemical reactions changing the internal structure of the steel simultaneously.
To handle that complexity, the researchers had to account for something called lattice parameters.
Yes, the lattice parameters. You can think of lattice parameters as the precise physical dimensions of those atomic unit cells we were just talking about.
The boxes.
Right, the boxes. They are the exact distances between the atoms in the crystal structures of the ferrite, the austenite, and the cementite. They're the architectural blueprints of the metal.
And the tricky part for you listening to imagine here is that these blueprints are not static. The dimensions are constantly shifting.
Very dynamic.
The researchers had to calculate how these lattice parameters changed based on the specific reaction temperature, which in this study was continuously measured at 420 degrees Celsius.
They also had to factor in the linear thermal expansion coefficients of the materials. And crucially, they had to track the fluctuating average carbon and chromium content within the remaining untransformed austenite as the reaction progressed.
Because as the ferrite forms, it pushes its excess carbon into the remaining austenite.
Exactly.
That constantly changes the chemical makeup of the remaining parent material and therefore changes its atomic dimensions. It is literally like trying to measure the volume of a room while the walls are moving, the temperature is spiking, and the furniture is constantly changing shape.
It's a nightmare to measure. To account for this incredibly dynamic environment, especially that chaotic scenario where cementite precipitates alongside the ferrite, the researchers derived an entirely new, incredibly complex formula.
Equation 2.
Yes, they labeled it equation 2. They needed a mathematical model robust enough to handle all these shifting variables simultaneously.
Equation 2 incorporates the volume fractions of the cementite, the shifting lattice parameters of the cementite at room temperature, the total carbon content locked up in the ferrite in cementite.
and the precise atomic dependencies of those lattice parameters on the alloying elements like chromium.
It's a lot.
It is a mathematical masterpiece. It was designed to map the true physical reality of a highly complex multi-phase transformation occurring at 420 degrees Celsius, rather than relying on the idealized, simplified versions of the past.
And all of that dense math leads us to the visual proof. The researchers provided three distinct graphs in the paper to map out the isothermal transformation of austenite at 420 degrees Celsius.
Let's walk through what these graphs actually look like for everyone listening, because they tell the whole story.
Okay, so picture a standard graph in your mind. The vertical axis, the y-axis, represents the physical length change of the metal.
And the horizontal axis, the x-axis, represents the volume fraction, meaning how much of the metal has actually transformed inside.
Right, so figure one plots that relationship for a very specific scenario. Ferrite containing just 0.03 weight percent carbon. It's a relatively low carbon scenario.
Then we move to figure two. This maps out the exact same relationship, but this time the ferrite is supersaturated with 0.2 weight percent carbon. The internal chemistry is much more crowded.
And finally, figure three turns the complexity all the way up.
Wow.
It plots the length change against a combined volume fraction of both carbon-free ferrite AND, that hard cementite compound we mentioned earlier.
Okay.
With 0.2 weight percent carbon locked into those transformed phases altogether.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the revelation is in the shape of the data on those graphs. Across all three of these highly distinct, mathematically complex scenarios, whether the ferrite has low carbon, high carbon, or is mixed with precipitating cementite, the graphs look practically identical.
Which is wild. What do they actually look like?
They all display a perfectly straight diagonal line moving up and to the right. The relationship between the volume fraction of the transformation products and the relative length change of the steel specimen is perfectly linear.
A perfectly straight line in experimental science is like finding a unicorn.
It really is.
It means absolute predictability. It means that despite all the atomic chaos and moving walls inside the metal, simply measuring the external expansion of the steel really does give you a perfectly proportional map of the internal volume fraction that is transformed.
The linearity is miraculously preserved, regardless of the complex microstructural changes happening inside the metal. The loading bar analogy actually works.
But there is a catch.
Always a catch.
And it is a big one. The paper is very careful to state that this pristine linearity is only proven to be preserved up to 0.7 of the volume fraction.
Meaning, once the steel is about 70% transformed, the straight line breaks. You can no longer guarantee that the expansion of the metal is telling you the exact truth in a perfectly proportional way.
Think of it like baking a cake. You can watch the cake rise in the oven, and for the first 70% of the baking time, that rising action is a great indicator that the batter is transforming into fluffy cake.
Great analogy.
But right at the end, the rising stops. If you assume the cake is 100% done baking just because it stopped growing, you are going to cut into it and find a center full of raw liquid batter.
And that limitation is crucial. It defines the boundary of predictability. Up to 70%, the dilatometer is a nearly perfect translator of internal atomic changes into external physical measurements.
But beyond that point?
Beyond that point, the chaotic realities of the physical world begin to warp that relationship.
What kind of chaotic realities are we talking about?
Perhaps the way the newly formed crystal structures begin to physically crash into each other, or complex, unpredictable shifts in local carbon concentrations as space runs out.
Just physical crowding.
Exactly. Whatever the exact cause, it is a stark reminder that scientific models, no matter how elegant, always have physical boundaries. You can't trust the external growth to tell you what's happening internally once you pass that 70% mark.
So what does this all mean? Why did M. Takahashi and HKDH Padishia, working out of the University of Cambridge, go through all this immense trouble?
It's a fair question.
Why did the massive Nippon Steel Corporation, who actually funded this research, care enough to pay for it? They mathematically modeled atomic unit cells, they mapped out shifting carbon concentrations, and they derived complex new equations just to prove a line was straight for 70% of a reaction. Why does this matter to you in the real world?
It matters because of the ultimate warning explicitly emphasized in the text of the paper. This is the myth-busting moment that changes how manufacturing works.
laid on us.
The researchers state emphatically that it is never justified to assume that the maximum length change observed during isothermal transformation corresponds to the complete 100% transformation of the austenite.
Let me make sure I am grasping the scale of this. You cannot simply watch a dilatometer, wait for the piece of metal to stop changing size, and blindly assume the internal chemical reaction is finished.
You cannot. Which is exactly what people in the industry were doing. They were treating the end of the physical expansion as the finish line for the internal transformation.
They assumed the loading bar reaching the edge of the screen meant the file was ready to open.
Exactly. But this paper mathematically proves that the metal's outward expansion and its internal atomic transformation are not perfectly locked together all the way to the end. The linear relationship falls apart.
Think about the real-world consequences of that flawed assumption.
They are massive. If a major manufacturer like Nippon Steel assumes a batch of structural steel is completely transformed just because it stopped expanding, and they pull it from the heat treatment early based on that visual cue,
they could end up with a structurally compromised material.
Precisely. The external clues deceive you right at the very end of the process. You think you are building a bridge with fully hardened steel, but internally, the atomic structure is still half-baked batter.
That is terrifying.
It is. The research provides the industry with the exact mathematical tools Equation 1 and Equation 2 required to calculate the actual volume fraction obtained, rather than relying on a deeply flawed visual assumption.
So it fixes the blind spot.
Yes. It is about replacing convenient guesswork with rigorous atomic-level mathematical certainty. That is how you ensure the integrity of materials used to build our modern world. It is a safeguard against catastrophic failure born from lazy assumptions.
It has been a brilliant journey today. We started with a very basic, seemingly logical assumption about a piece of hot metal expanding like a progress bar.
We really covered a lot of ground.
We dove all the way down into the atomic differences between a 2-atom ferrite unit cell and a 4-atom austenite unit cell. We mapped out the dense math required to track carbon supersaturation and precipitating cementite as the metal's internal blueprints constantly shifted at 420 degrees Celsius.
And we proved that while the expansion of the metal is reliably beautifully linear up to a 0.7 volume fraction, our eyes and even our most sensitive measuring instruments can absolutely deceive us about when a process is truly finished. This raises an important question, one that goes far beyond metallurgy. If the world's top material scientists spent decades mistakenly assuming a complex process was 100% complete simply because the visible external changes had stopped, where else in your own life or in your own industry are you confusing the end of visible change with the actual completion of a complex internal process? Just because the surface has stopped moving doesn't mean the transformation is over.
That is an incredible thought to leave on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the assumptions, keep looking beneath the surface, and we will see you next time.